All right, good morning, everyone. Welcome. My name is Tim Guile. I'm along with Tuari Salah. We're the guiding teachers at Seattle Insight. And we're very happy to welcome Ronnie back to teach this year. And just a few housekeeping pieces before I introduce Ronnie. So one is that we'll be recording this meeting, but we will edit out the Q&A so you don't have to worry about your questions being posted. And in terms of chatting, the chat function of Zoom, we could ask you not to chat Rodney directly. You can chat myself, Tim here. I'll put a more of a clear name there. And then also for tech support, you can do tech support for Ken, and we can answer your questions behind the scene and let Rodney focus on his teaching. So I'm very happy to thank you, Ken, for changing my name. Very happy to welcome Rodney back to Seattle Insight. As many of you know, he was the founding teacher of Seattle Insight back in, I think, 98 is when he began teaching here and stepped down from that position in 2015. He was also a guiding teacher at IMS and spent time in Asia as a Buddhist monk and also as a hospice director. He's an author of several books, which I encourage you to check out and enjoy. And I hope you benefit from this weekend with exploring boundaries with Rodney, and a warm welcome.
Okay. Are you handing it over, Tim?
All yours.
All mine. What if I get scared? Thank you so much. It is an honor to be with you all. Let me just get you all in the picture here. And for some reason, Tim, your face is still central to the. Is there some way I can?
Yeah, can you go up to view up in your upper right, and if you click
okay.
And hit gallery.
Okay. Okay. Good.
That fix it. Okay.
Yeah. Well, as I look at your faces, my heart warms. It's a delight. It's a delight to see you all. For those of you who I don't know, it's an equal delight. And of course, for those of you who I've known in many cases decades, I share our welcome with all. So, if we have a weekend together, and we have a lot going on this weekend. As the schedules show, we're going to have four Dharma talks over the 2 days. We're going to have two question and answer period, four guided inquiries, and two Qigong sessions with Ellen, my wife. And the reason I'm keeping you busy, if that's the definition of being busy on retreat, is because there's a lot of information, but mostly I want you to settle into yourselves through the stability of my words. Hopefully they'll be stable, because the subject we're approaching is really we're questioning conventional reality, and that can be confusing, disorienting. It can be disturbing if you're not used to moving your Dharma into that particular area. I'm used to it. I've been exploring it now for many, many, many years. So I feel very safe within this dialogue. And also I hope to impart that sense of safety onto those who are listening. But it does address our comfort level, which all of Dharma should do. All of Dharma should put us at should challenge us, so that we're asking, "What is he talking about? That's not the way I see life." It may be that we're seeing life through a distorted lens called the mind, and that's why we don't see life the way it really is. And after years and years and years of practice, to be able to separate out undistorted life, pristine, true reality, from that which we cover over and conceptualize is really what Dharma is all about. Now, when you get involved in Dharma very early on, first of all, you have to deal with the quiet, because we don't seek quiet out so frequently as a species. So you have to deal with your own inward quiet, and you have to deal with the fact that your thoughts keep creating a distraction where your attention just follows the thought rather than steadies itself. So much of the early phase of Dharma practice is learning to steady one's attention. And then you begin to see the mind as if you were watching it from a very different perspective than the ordinary way we converse and have our own inward dialogue. So when you begin to see the mind from a more objective perspective, you begin to see that many of the things you thought to be true about yourself aren't true at all. For instance, that your thoughts aren't your own, that thoughts are happening in a conditioned kind of way, but that they are not, you're not thinking them. And so that's what I mean by attacking our established beliefs. Dharma does that. But we stay very comfortable. Well, we get used to that a little bit, and then we stay very comfortably in ourselves, and we start noticing that our emotions are also conditioned, and we start noticing different parts like that. And very gently, the Dharma brings us into a different perspective of reality. However, what usually happens is that you'll see it in meditation. You'll get up from meditation, and you'll back induced within your old reality and your conditioned reality. So nothing changes too much in your life, except that when you sit down, you see a different perspective of your own inward life. Still, there's the inward life, and then you have the life you live that is not self-reflective, and then you have the external life that seems to be happening to you. The outdoors, the differentiation between the skin and that which lies outside the skin. And for many people, that's the equation of their Dharma history. That's what they want. They want to be tucked safely inside themselves. They want to lessen their own sense of self pain and disorder. They want to smooth themselves out. We all want that. It's not an indictment. It's basically where we all sort of turn to find that kind of self-nourishment and stability. But there's more. There is much more. And I wish to guide you into the much more. Now, I don't suggest that you force yourself forward to try to integrate what I'm saying into your Dharma practice. You can, but I would hesitate to have you push yourself anywhere. This is a pull, not a push. I should do this. He's saying that. I've got to see that. Don't do that to yourself. Let yourself feel attracted to what is being said, curious above all else about what is being said, and interested in seeing, well, maybe I can look a little bit at this. But be willing to stop and arrest that development. If you try to push yourself, and I mean this as sincerely as I can, I have seen people of long established practices try to push themselves into another orientation to reality that isn't showing itself, but you think it should be showing itself, which leaves your mind disordered, confused, disoriented, and that may take some time for you to come back down into normalizing. So no pushing on this weekend. We have something going to help us with that. It's only 2 days, and likely this 2 days of talks isn't going to create a lot of havoc inwardly. But I do a week long, Narayan and I do a week long at IMS, also in Zoom on Zoom from May 4th to May 11th this year. We do it every year, which you also might attend. Now, a week long is very different because you have a week of this kind of reorientation coming at you, and that can, because of the prolongation of a week as opposed to 2 days, that can stay with you for a while. But the same rules govern the week long as the week. Just listen, see if it's interesting to you. See if you're pulled to explore and self-discover. I will have talks, and with a talk, I'll have a guided inquiry, I call them. Guided inquiries is to take us into the actual experience of where the talk is going, is pointing. And with that, you'll get a different perception of the, it won't be just an intellectual or perception of the talk. You'll be taken into the real substance, allowing yourself to actually grow and realize what the talk is pointing toward. But let's understand that when we are talking this weekend is about boundaries. You're not going to stay unsettled. You're not going to stay settled when we talk about boundaries. We're not just talking about obvious boundaries by putting, you know, some distance between you and people who you think will harm you. Okay, that's not the kind of boundary. I'll talk about that aspect of boundary formation, but that's not the kind of boundaries we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about the boundary between your skin and the outside of your skin. We think I stop at the skin. You don't stop at the skin. That's a conceptual overlay that we put upon reality and cut ourselves off from a true full embrace of union. Does that sound interesting? I hope so. How about the boundary between what your mind is doing and the sense of you that seems to be outside of it? You're not outside the mind. You are of the mind. You are an expression of the mind. And we keep thinking, I have a mind. You don't have a mind. The mind holds you. That's a boundary that we place. What about the difference between the mind and the body? You think the body, well, it's not really a part of the mind. No, it is part of the mind. You see, what we're doing here is we're eliminating conceptual overlays that we have to reality. We're releasing the need to separate ourselves out further and further and further. And I'll be going into this much more thoroughly. I'm just giving you an intro into what's going on. So, first, I want you to know that whatever I say is true. I've been living with it. And I know that it's true. But just because it's true does not mean you are prepared to follow or commit yourself to that truth. So again, I want you to weigh in and hold yourself. Always stay within yourself. That's my main message, especially when we're talking about this kind of disorienting talks. So just, okay, relax into the topic and see whether this subject invites curiosity. Are you interested in going forward? Or is your current understanding sufficient for now? No pressure on myself whatsoever to force myself into an exploration that doesn't naturally fit my curiosity. At the same time, and the reason I'm really bringing this subject up, because we're in a critical time in the evolution of our consciousness. I was listening to an Eckhart Tolle taping on the evolution of consciousness, and he's very good at explaining that the consciousness evolves as it does, like we evolve physically through evolution. We've held our consciousness in place now far longer than we should have because it hasn't been working for us. The sense of I, me, as a central locating entity that establishes the boundaries that it surrounds itself with and then governs itself with its own ideas and own emotions within the conditioned reference of how it believes life to be isn't working anymore. Look around globally. And you'll see the product of that type of thinking and that type of self-placement within life. It's not working anymore. I don't separate the need for evolution from everything that's going on. This is one movement, internally, externally, universally. And the fact that all these things are rising together is not coincidental. The fact that we have a climate crisis that are reaching tipping points in which we can't move back from. And if you read about the descriptions of what the world looks like as these things tip further into the future, it's not pretty. That's the truth of it. The truth that there's immigration issues comes from the fear of being climated out of your particular comfortable environment. The fact that there is pandemics now, that in my 77 years, I never had I was never amidst the pandemic like we've had for several years, and will continue on in some form or other for the rest of our life. Here's another one, artificial intelligence, something that we have, it's self-generated. It's all these things are self-generated. We're establishing machines that has vastly greater intelligence than the human species. And some AI scientists believe that those machines can turn and use us as their servants rather than the proper way we should be using and orienting ourselves to machines. Look at how we spend much of our free time in virtual realities that have no governance, that have no ground, that have no sense of oneself at all. We have flown ourselves or thrown ourselves into a visual make-believe. And all of the different ways that we govern ourselves within that virtual reality, all of the Facebooks and the tweeters and all of that stuff, where we're subject to what they're saying about us with no relevance to be able to check that out in any kind of personal or interpersonal way. These are disorienting disruptions that are being that we're having to go through in this era. All of this, in my opinion, is forcing the evolution of consciousness forward, because it makes it clear to almost everyone that is not denying or lying about these evolutionary trends. Remembering that Dharma is the Dharma of truth only. Not fictitious or artificial or in any way imaginative. So we have the evolution of consciousness now being thrust in front of us. This is why we have to evolve out. This is what is needed now. This is the next gentle step we have to take as an evolution. And some of us will move along and some of us will lag behind. At some point, consciousness, the environment, the earth, everything will demand that we move forward with it, with its evolution. Or we'll be left behind, tragically left behind. So, these are the symptoms and signs, the physical symptoms and signs of the necessity of evolution. And that's what this talk is really governed for. Because what I'm going to show us is that we have lived within this sense of I and other, me and thou, for perhaps millions of years as a species. And at first it worked because we had to climb up a tree to get away from the lion and we'll come down the tree and try to find food and risk ourselves. So of course we were boundary to try to put up some kind of protection. Ah, to know a lion differentiated from sense of self requires a boundary, and to know what to do when the lion attacks and what to do and where to eat and all of that, which as a new species on the earth establishes the boundaries for its own sense of protection. But that phase of our physical evolution is gone now. What we are is attacked by one another because we haven't evolved out of the need to find an enemy or to find to be a prey for somebody coming at us. And the Dharma, which is also a part of this whole evolution, has now been with us for 50, 60 years. So we have the foundation on which to move this evolution of consciousness forward. If we didn't, we'd be praying and hoping and wishing, and we would have superstition as our way forward, as opposed to the truth. And we're unique because not a lot of people are into the Dharma. And so we have made progress in ourselves in ways that the rest of humanity, the vast majority of humanity, hasn't yet understood what it needs to do. And so many people are just lost in lying to themselves and creating fictitious, imaginative pictures of what is really occurring. Something like 40% of people are lost within the denial of some phase of our crisis. That's a lot of people that deny climate change, the disruption that AI could create, even the continuation of a pandemic. It hasn't gone away. It's just now manageable on our terms. So these are all signs that our species is out of alignment. And every single one of these causes are self-inflicted. Now, if you're self-inflicting this kind of damage, there's something wrong with the way you're seeing the world. It shouldn't look like this. But it does, because we are stuck within this patterned way of representing ourselves and everybody else external to us. And it would be, if it were true, then let's just get on with the misery. But it's not true. And to be disturbed out of our ignorance is difficult. I've said that, and I will say it again throughout this weekend. It means seeing things differently. Let me just give you a cross section real quickly. Where Dharma has to go, it's inevitable, is to the true representation of reality, its fundamental essence of reality. Now, when we look out, we don't see the fundamental essence of reality, because the fundamental essence of reality is still, it's immediate, it's quiet, it's wondrous, it's spacious, we don't see that. We see a crowded universe, we see conflict and irritation, we see all of the stuff that we see. The reason we don't see fundamental reality is because we see through the mind. And the mind imprisons us within its conditioned reference to what reality is. It's there as we see it to keep us stable within it. And so a house is a house, and even though I can generalize and see other like shapes, I also know those like shapes are houses and trees and birds and. But nothing comes together. Everything is an isolated entity. These are signs of being out of alignment because we are so distanced from the fundamental truth of reality, its essence. Now we say, well, I don't want to live like some kind of bland, mindless, See, the ego will always find ways not to go where it needs to go. It'll give you fictitious reasons to stay stuck. Fundamental reality, in essence, when lived, is as good as it sounds. Wondrous, spacious, singular, heartfelt, connected. It's as good as it feels. It's as good as it gets. It's the seat of aliveness. All of the conditioning we put on top of aliveness keeps us from being fully alive. So when we come out of that, we're not in some kind of chaotic pattern that we don't recognize. We recognize it immediately as our own, as the seat of our aliveness, the seat of all aliveness. So we're no longer able to thrive within the life we have created. We are stuck with our self-definitions, and that is destroying the world. We have to evolve out of our self-isolation and into our essential nature by waking up. We have to move at our individual pace, not from sincerity, not from anxiety. This does not work from being afraid of being left behind. It works at our own pace, only at our own pace. And that way it smooths the reference, the place where our foot lands for the next footfall. This is the Dharma's liberating direction, is in discovering our essence. And that just simply means evolving out of the I thought, because the keystone boundary that establishes all other boundaries is the sense of I separate from everything else. So we're looking for the intrinsic nature of reality before we added or uncovered it with our ideas about how it should be. So, into the timeless world of the heart. Now, I am going to be offering talks, and then I'm going to be offering how to realize the talk substance. And there's a lot of words on this retreat, and if you want those beautiful moments of stillness and isolation and aloneness that sitting meditation brings, then please, outside of the talks and the words of this retreat, please find that time to nurture yourself in the way that you yearn. So it doesn't interfere with you listening, but it also doesn't interfere with you being able to do more of the schedule on your own. I was reading a definition of inquiry I'd like to read to you because it's so, I tweaked it and made it, put it in a vocabulary I think that's easily understandable. But a teacher was saying that the transformative power of inquiry has to do with where the seeing occurs. It's like stepping back and seeing a familiar terrain as if you were outside of it. You're taking in the familiar landscape and it's recognizable, but there's something radically altering about seeing this landscape from a completely different point of view, free of your conditioned way of thinking about it. So that's inquiry. Inquiry is still being still being still because you're interested and looking at what's going on. That's where the stillness comes from that sense of silent listening. And yet what you're seeing is completely recognizable, but the way we're seeing it, which is from that point of view of silence, rather than through our normal way of looking, which is full of noise and contradictions and insults and this should be that way and all of the judgments that we place upon it. When we see it from stillness, you see it in a very different way. And you know that the way you're now seeing it is much truer and more in depth than the way that we were seeing it through our noise. And Zen, they call that the backward step. Backward step means looking from a radically different place than our usual perceptions, which is from quiet. And we'll be doing those in the course of this weekend. It means looking outside of the way we distort reality. We're only distort reality through the words, because when we look through the mind, you look through the words of the thoughts that are inhabiting the mind, and then the seeing comes from projecting those thoughts onto reality. And that's why there's differentiation. It doesn't have differentiation. The mind has differentiation that it places and projects upon reality. That's the reason we see the things that we see. And that's the reason we keep ourselves in isolation to that seeing, because it also allows me to know myself. If I know what a house is, that knowing is in me. And I like knowing because it differentiates me in a population that loves to know. And I'll be getting much more in depth to what I'm just saying, but taking that backward step is such an important element of our freedom. And then once you take that backward step and you see the truths of where silence seeing show, what silence seeing shows us, then we start moving in a reverse direction. This is also the backward step. Instead of just mindlessly following pleasure and avoiding pain, we reverse that. Sitting through discomfort instead of arguing with it. Feeling pleasure without having to be driven madly towards it. It means questioning our conditioning and putting into action what it is that we see. That's essential if we're going, because the body is not separate from the mind. The body has its own fabric of movement and intelligence. And unless we put our insights into the dynamics of body in motion, they remain conceptual, or they can remain as a conceptual idea that hasn't fully been proven in body-mind. So we don't allow our condition to be mindlessly believed in and followed. So we become the truth even before it's fully developed within us through our actions. Many of us have already started that movement. I would say probably all of us have if you're here on this retreat. We've already started feeling our heart shift to be more inclusive. This is because we've seen the truth of inclusivity as opposed to selfishness, and the damage selfishness causes. And we've already been willing to put that into action. We may still see individually and separately, which I'm sure most of us do, but you have a sense of where this thing is going if you've been practicing Dharma for some time, and you've already decided that you're going to move your life in that way. And so you're well on the way towards that physical assimilation of the truth. And that's realization. Now, the other thing that is very important, because you can assimilate a lot, but still hold yourself in check as being an outside observer to it all. So a central necessity in moving forward is to question the central role we have given the sense of self. It's a conditioned reference. When we feel a certain sensation of me, we reference it as a self that's separate from. It's more of an idea than a reality. In fact, it is an idea and not a reality in the sense that of it being true. But how do we approach that new way of looking at ourselves? Argument just comes from reestablishing ourselves in counter to the way we think we are. That just establishes a new sense of self-argument against the old sense of myself needing to be changed or something. That doesn't work. Doesn't work to create another boundary. Now the true sense of me is going to argue about the false sense of me out of the picture. It doesn't work like that. You just create a new sense of you. And when we have a new sense of you, let me assure you, there will be greed, hatred, and delusion embedded within our minds, because that's what it looks like to separate ourselves out. You're on your own. You're isolated. Of course there's going to be greed and self-preservation and self-isolation and finger pointing and judgment and criticism and all the other reasons that our culture is in such disarray, not just our culture, but the world's culture. So how do we release it? You see, this is so radical. This is when I feel the truth of it, which I just did in that moment. It's so radically simple. It's the reason it's not complex enough. It's not difficult enough. It's not making me jump through a bunch of hoops. We simply quiet it. Be quiet. When you realize through repetitive awareness, you realize that you are not your thoughts, even though most of us probably have a taste of that fact, as that deepens, you realize thoughts are not providing anything that is not separate. It's providing more separation, not less. So we realize we have to quiet. We have to be still in order to see, as in Zen says, taking the backward step. And that quietness shows us a different terrain than the noisy sense of ourself. And that's where inquiry is supposed to take us. Now, as we do inquiries this weekend, it's not working for me, I don't see it. Don't do that to yourself. All that does is thicken your dynamics, the self's dynamics. It pits you against yourself. Pitting yourself against yourself as a backlash, either positively how great you are or how negatively how awful you feel about not being able to keep up or whatever it is that you're feeling awful about, doesn't work. Not in quieting the sense of self. Stepping out of that way of thinking that I am central to life, where the whole of life takes a back seat to my needs. That's the old expression of consciousness. Stuck. Self-involved. Egocentric. So how do we release the forces of conditioning, which the whole mind, all these neurological pathways have been established because they've been conditioned to be established? I like this and I don't like that. Those are neurological pathways that lead to the same conclusion and emotion of like or dislike. Those are central to the way we perceive our roles. And we don't think we're seeing through conditioned patterns. We think we're seeing life as it really is. Not true. We're seeing it as it was, which established the conditioning to begin with, and then placing that memory upon life and operating as if it were real and happening now. This is how crazy it gets. So, quieting. See, this is the way out. You know, this is the way out. I know, somewhere in Dante's Hell, in Dante, the writer, poet, philosopher of ancient times, or not ancient times, hundreds of years ago, above the gates of hell, all you who enter give up hope of ever leaving. Now you read that sign, you go, well, I'm in despair. I'll never leave. I might as well give up hope on there. No, that's the way out of hell, is to give up a future planning, conditioned reference to escaping. Give up time. Give up boundaries. Quiet. There's no hope. That's just not despairing. That's quiet. That calls to quiet. Don't have any hope. You don't have anywhere to go. I mean, really not having hope. Then you shut down. You're quiet. That's the way out of this thing. Relaxing. Oh, relaxing. Wow. You see, these things are not more effort or will. I've got to relax. No, relaxing is the unbinding of ourselves, is the releasing of the tension of hope, you might say, in this analogy. Releasing. So I will be talking about relaxing, which requires no force of self-tension, observing, that quiet observation that is not being compelled by your need to gain something. Just observe. And then what is seen is completely opened to, without any parameters, without setting up what I see to what I want to see. It's wide open seeing. So we'll be doing a meditation after this that allows that relaxing, observing, and allowing to show itself. So we don't scold our way or judge our way forward. This is not a force of will or determination. You are stepping out of yourself, where you would have willfully determined the direction you want to go, into seeing what is here when we're no longer trying to force reality upon ourselves or change it or manipulate it. If you want to see the essence of reality, how are you going to get there? With your mind pushing or, I don't like essence. Let me show, how about essence with a apple? That's Garden of Eden. Okay, so now I've got an apple. Now you've got your old want and desires and fears coming in because somebody might take my apple. Okay, so this is just wide open allowance. Remaining ignorant and unconscious takes effort. Living the state of wonder. Remember, one of the qualities of essence is wonder, not knowing, not comma, knowing. Knowing doesn't have wonder. It has knowing. When you know something, you're not in the state of wonder. The essence of reality holds wonder as a living state of being. Establishing boundaries takes effort. because now I've got to defend them and hold them fast. That tension is not once and then the boundary is established. It's continuous tension because it's at all times that I need to assert that I am here and the world is out there. We are ready, and this is so important, when we love the truth. When we love the truth. You know, we're getting so many lies and distortions now from people who are trying to run this country. And most of us love to follow and be told what to do. But Dharma is standing on your own two feet autonomously in wonder and developing that sense of stability in wonder. And that's the stability of wisdom. And that's called samadhi. Samadhi is not concentration. It's the stability of heart and mind to know itself so thoroughly that it can't be persuaded otherwise. So awareness is not only the essence we seek, intrinsic to reality, but it's also the only way to realize the truth. You use the truth to realize the truth. And we have to use our awareness toward that end. Okay. Okay, so, what's on our schedule here? I've got to find out where the schedule is. Let's see. Okay. It's close to 10. So we'll take a break. Now, the schedule is only a general schedule. I'm going to be going outside, which I am already. I'm going to be going outside of it and with setting our own times. But the one thing I won't do is we'll stop at lunch at noon, and then at 1 o'clock we'll meet back in here with Ellen leading a Qigong, a 45-minute Qigong, which is movement, embodied movement. When I was talking about the embodiment of wisdom, Qigong actually, I can't think of another expression of movement, including yoga, and I've done yoga for 50 years, consolidates mind and body into movement. So give it a good try. It's an amazing Eastern tradition that we're just learning these days, although Ellen has been doing it for 25 years, as well as having practiced meditation and many retreats, many 3-month retreats and month longs for probably 40 years. So you're under good leadership in learning Qigong. But it's the assimilation. It's dropping a boundary between mind and body, really. That's what it does. And you can feel it. You can feel the harmony of that release, that of the tension that's released. So what we'll do, it's about 5 till. We will meet back here at 10:15 for a guided inquiry. This is joyous work. Don't be glum. this is joyous work. You feel every movement you see that is true may initially frighten us, but once you internalize it, once you realize it, you feel the delight and wonder of it, which just adds a whole dimension of the unconditioned to your life. Okay, all. See you back at 10:15. Be well.